My guests on Late Debate, Minister of State for European Affairs Pascal Donoghue, joining me from Cork tonight, Peter O'Loughlin, who is formerly a member of the National Independent Party, now plans to run as an independent candidate in the European election in May, Dr. Ronit Lenton, Professor of Sociology at Trinity College, and Dr. Jean-Pierre Ayanga, originally from Democratic Republic of Congo and who has lived here in Ireland for 17 years. We're going to talk now about immigration and racism here in Ireland. 2 weeks ago, the people of Switzerland voted to bring back strict quotas for immigration from EU countries. That vote invalidates the Swiss-EU agreement on freedom of movement. Switzerland's economy is booming at the moment and unemployment is low, but many Swiss people worry about immigration. A quarter of the 8 million strong population is foreign, and last year 80,000 new immigrants arrived. And supporters of quotas there believe that free movement has put pressure on housing, health, education and transport. They also argue that foreign workers drive salaries down. So is there any appetite for a similar move here? And if so, is it economically driven or driven by xenophobia? Peter O'Loughlin in Cork. Peter, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hi, Audrey. Thank you.
Would you favour a quota system for immigrants here?
Yes, I would. I think it's in line with best international practice, which looking at countries like Australia, Canada, where a lot of Irish immigrants go to, they have very well-functioning visa systems and quota systems. What that allows them to do is to control the extent of immigration and also the type of immigration. So just to ensure that it always ends up benefiting the native country.
What type of immigration would you want to see here?
Well, the type of immigration is basically a non-economically driven migration depending on the economic situation in Ireland. So, for example, let me give you a quick example. If somebody has skills as a welder and wishes to come into Ireland to work, but we have 2,000 welders, say, unemployed, then I don't think it makes sense for that person to be competing with our own welders to work. While, for example, if we're short on, say, veterinarians, and a veterinarian wishes to come to Ireland and applies for a visa, then I think it would make sense to give that person a visa and to have them in the country.
How much support do you think you have for that position?
I think there's quite a lot of support. It's a position, as I said, it's driven really by common sense. I mean, migration is quite a natural phenomenon between countries. It always has been and it always will be. It's the extent of migration. And again, you have to base the extent of that migration on your conditions in your own country. Now, we know we're going through a very bad time. Well, an awful, awful lot of people in Ireland are going through a very bad time. Something I fear, which is developing in Ireland, is that the concept of a two-tier economy, where certain people are left behind, or they're simply forgotten. I've met people like that so many times on the ground, and they fear that. Now, what you worry about in terms of migration is that when you have an open border situation where there's not very good controls in place, you don't simply know how many people are coming into the country. Wages are being driven down. There's more competition out there. And people just find that a bit maddening, to be quite honest.
So you don't subscribe to the view, or what do you say to people who hold the view, that immigrants only contribute positively to the economy of any country, that their economic success of any country would not be possible without them?
No, I don't agree with that. I mean, I don't even, this whole concept of taking immigrants as just one large group of people who are basically nearly all the same is frankly ridiculous. Immigrants should be judged on an individual basis on what they contribute to the country, as I said. So when they're coming into the country, you see some people will end up contributing very positively, others may not. Now, that's why you have to have those controls in place to ensure that they're contributing positively. And then you would definitely get the positive contributions. I mean, if we look over the last number of years in Ireland, especially during the boom times, we got there's an awful lot of Eastern Europeans who came to Ireland to work. Now, I worked with quite a number of them myself. I worked at quite a few low-wage jobs in my early 20s. And I knew why they were there. And we were talking. And they were saying, we're coming in, we're working, then we're leaving. That's it. We're here to save. And you know, that was grand. You know, there was jobs. The economy was booming. The lads were nice. You know, they're sound people. You know, they're law-abiding. But as you see now, a lot of those people are actually leaving. But if you look at stats, there's still a net influx. Even this year, this year again. Now last year there was a, in 2012, I think a net decrease of maybe roughly 8,500 migrants, foreign nationals coming into Ireland. This is including Irish migration inwards and outwards. Now it's gone up again to 2,100 positive, where there's a net increase.
Okay.
But you have to ask the question, if there's no jobs in Ireland, if we have 450,000 people unemployed, 85,000 people in training courses, where are these people finding jobs? Or are they just coming here for other reasons?
Okay, let me bring in my other guest here, Dr. Jean-Pierre Ayanga. Jean-Pierre, you've lived here, as we say, for nearly 20 years now. What do you say to Peter O'Loughlin there, who supports the idea of controls on the number of immigrants coming to this country?
Thank you. I think that he goes from a very biased observations. When you look at the case of Switzerland, in Switzerland you have like 23% of the population is made of people who are not Swiss citizens. Mm-hmm. That's first thing. The second thing is the net immigration is almost 1% of the population, which is equal 80,000 people, which is not the case of Ireland. The third thing is that every year you have around 30,000 to 40,000 people who are naturalized, which is not the case of Ireland. The other thing, you have almost 1 million of EU citizens working there in Switzerland. Another observation, you have almost 230,000 people moving into Switzerland per day just to work.
From neighboring countries.
Mm-hmm. From EU countries.
Yeah.
This is not the case of Ireland. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to raise fear among Irish people.
No,
reasons which are not similar at all.
Peter, this is kind of one of the points, I believe, why the Swiss did vote against or voted in favour of the quota system, because back when these kind of rules were relaxed as far as migration was concerned, they were told quite publicly by the major parties and so on that roughly 8,000 people per year would enter the country. Now, it turns out that roughly 85,000 people per year enter the country. Now, this is over the course of a period of time. I think this is one of the reasons, because, yes, as Pierre stated, you stated quite a number of statistics there. But I think people are looking at and going, wait a minute, did we want 23% of our population to be made up of foreign nationals and migrants? Is that the way we want to go? Where is that going? If we keep going this direction, will it go to 30? Will it go to 35? Will that threaten Swiss culture and identity? And these are very salient points. That's not fear-mongering at all. That's a very fair, valid point to make. And I think the Swiss, especially, because they've been so successful, their neutrality, their system of governments, their quality of life is fantastic. And they're just stopping now and going, you know, let's take a step back here. They've told us these things. They proved to be wrong. So let's put in a quota system. We'll go from there.
Jean-Pierre, go ahead.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing? You see, this kind of reflection, the kind of thinking, this was mistaking a lot of leaders in many countries. When they hear little tiny minority people thinking like
Peter
is doing, this is undermining the all work done by NGOs, by politicians. People would like to bring the whole population together to work toward a very well-defined goal, which is, putting the economy of Ireland ahead, you know. So I think it's very dangerous to even encourage this kind of thinking. I find it really dangerous.
Okay, Pascal Donoghue, in relation to Peter O'Loughlin's point, though, that in particularly in a time of recession, if you have welders, people as a welder coming in with skills, and you have a number of unemployed welders here, shouldn't there be controls, economic controls?
But we already have a huge number of tools within our social welfare system to deal with so much of this. And in relation to this question here regarding controls and the need for and the argument for quotas, I would fundamentally disagree with Peter while accepting his right to put this forward and put it forward for debate. I'd make a number of arguments in relation to it, but I make a very practical one first. The practical one I would make is, how would Ireland fare if these quotas were imposed by other countries throughout Europe and throughout the world? Mm-hmm. What would be the effect on us? And I'm not just making this argument in terms of Irish people who are abroad, who have immigrated, who we want to come back. I'm also making this in terms of, let's say these quotas went up. How would that impact on our ability of people to travel abroad, for Irish goods and services to be sold abroad? Furthermore, if we got ourselves to a point that we said to countries, we don't want your people to come in, how willing do you think they would be then to take our goods and services at some point in the future that are made by Irish people? We've a grand and very intricate bargain in place, particularly across Europe at the moment, that I strongly believe we have to sustain and we have to argue for, which is in relation to freedoms. The freedom of people to move around, the freedom of ideas to circle around, and of goods and services to move around. And if one of that, if that's changed in one part, what makes you think the other parts will be left unchanged? And if that was to happen to a country like Ireland, whose prosperity is so dependent on our ability to trade with the outside world, it would have an awful effect on the ability of our society and our country to keep itself secure and prosper in the future.
OK, Peter, that's a pretty powerful argument. What do you say to it?
Look, I mean, first of all, on the issue of would people stop trading with us if we introduce quotas, first of all, you're not attacking an individual country. You're placing quotas. It doesn't matter what country the person comes into. And it's thought that business people who are making money by trading with us would simply go, oh, wait a minute, they didn't let in this guy into the country. Let's stop trading with him. Oh, terrible stuff. No, I really don't think that. Second of all, Irish people do have to go through certain checks, certain systems to get into certain countries. Some countries demand that you have certain skills. Some countries you have to apply for a visa. Some countries need money starting off. For example, in Australia, if you're working in Australia, your visa runs out, you're deported. You know, 900 Irish people have been deported over the last 3 years. You know, that's their decision to make. Nobody's not trading with Australia. Are we going to stop trading with Australia because they deported 900 Irish people? We know the score. And every Irish person knows the score when they go there. That's one of the facts about immigration. And this idea, in this scaremongering idea of that if we introduce what is technically a sound, reasonable policy on controlling our own borders, that the entire, that will be vilified by the entirety of Europe is just mad. Like, this is the kind of stuff you constantly hear in debates, debates on Nice or Lisbon, constant scaremongering and fearmongering. Okay. Don't vote for Nice. Or if we don't vote for Lisbon, the whole economy will collapse and jobs will be lost.
OK, Pascal. Okay,
yeah, well, I just want to respond to each of those in turn briefly. And like, I didn't accuse Peter of scaremongering or anything like that at all. We have to debate these ideas and we have to have rational arguments about each of them. But let me unpick each of the two arguments that he's made. Firstly, in relation to the visa argument, I mean, we already have a work permit system in place and requirements in place for anybody who's coming into our country that's not a member of the European Union. That's already in place within our country. And secondly, the point that he made regarding the response of governments. Let's be really clear about this point here. If we were to impose quotas on the ability of other members of the European Union to come into our country, it would be in direct conflict with our membership of the Union and would generate a very, very immediate response from other countries. And if you want perhaps a sign of that, just look at the early indications of the response that the European Union have made to the vote in Switzerland. And that's a country that is not a member of the European Union.
Peter, I'll come back to you in a moment, but I want to bring in our other guest here in Dublin first for her views. Ronit Lenton, Professor of Sociology at Trinity College. What's your view on this?
Well, I find it a bit bizarre that both Peter and Pascal here are debating the rationality of controls. I mean, what Pascal is trying to actually calm us down and say, basically, Peter, don't worry, we already control immigration. Yes, I think the Irish state controls immigration, and I think the Irish state is in fact racist in the way it controls immigration. I would like to say one other thing, that migrants are not just economic units. They're not just useful or not useful to economies. We're not really here talking about the use of capitalism. Migrants, and you know, in Germany in the early days, they said, when the Gastarbeiter came, they said, we asked for workers and people came. Migrants are people. They have families. They have dreams. They have histories. They have memories. They're not just working units.
And in what way is the state racist in terms of its controls?
From the very beginning, when migration started increasing in the 1990s, it spoke of migrants and refugees as a problem we have to deal with. All the talk was how can we actually control it? And we cannot speak only in terms of EU migrants. I completely agree with Pascal here. We can't impose restrictions on EU migrants, because then Irish people would not have the freedom to go. But that's really not the main thing, because there are migrants who are not EU, not EEA, whose rights and whose entitlements are much less than those who are EU. And if you bring Australia as a great example, let me remind you that Australia only recently has started deporting asylum seekers who come by boat, desperate people, to Manus Island, to Maro in Papua New Guinea, and people there die, they commit suicide. And this is considered to be good control of immigration. I really think we should aspire to something better. Australia is a great place when you go and work and make a good salary. My daughter works there and she's doing well. But Australia is actually extremely discriminatory against those people it doesn't consider useful to us. In fact, think of it. We're actually constructing some migrants as not useful. People like Jean-Pierre here, who is a qualified veterinary surgeon who couldn't find work in Ireland, worked for many years in an NGO because he had to. Now, he always worked, always contributed, always paid taxes. And like him, many people have done. Migrants are the pluckiest of the lot. It's hard to migrate across the world. It costs money. In fact, only 2-3% of people migrate. And yet they're considered by nation state as a problem that we have to manage, control and regulate. And I really find that pretty disturbing, particularly coming from a Jewish family whose ancestors were deported and moved. And remember, Switzerland has a very good history in that. It actually suggested to Nazi Germany to stamp Jewish passport with the letter J. So we can't really take... Switzerland is a great example we want to emulate, and I really would argue with Peter there on that.
Jean-Pierre, why can't you work as a veterinary surgeon here?
That's a good question.
I didn't
question.
Mean to expose you, but...
No, it's okay, it's okay. That's a good question, but I think it's a question that you should ask the Irish Veterinary Council. But anyway, I help you. There are two main conditions to work as a vet in this country. The first is yourself. You have to be a EU national. Exceptionally, they accept nationals from New Zealand, Australia, Iceland, and Norway. The second condition is that your basic veterinary degree has to be from those countries. When I came in 97, my basic veterinary degree was from Congo. Even if I completed postgraduate studies in Europe, and I wasn't Irish citizen, but now I'm an Irish citizen since 2002. Anyway, things haven't changed. My basic degree won't change. It will always be from Congo, and I showed in going back to university and completing a master degree in food science that I'm not that stupid. I can do studies like anybody else and maybe even better than some other people. So I think it's just a way of excluding some part of foreigners from some services. It's a way of protecting professions. But anyway, when a door is closed, many others are opened.
Is that fair, Pascal, that it's a way of protecting some professions? It's a way of excluding people who aren't Irish?
I mean, that point, I suppose, could be made to a variety of different professions. But in relation to the particular point here regarding, how qualifications and education can be recognised across borders. I mean, this is something the European Union is doing a lot of work in at the moment. Mm. It's the whole concept, to use an unfortunate phrase, of portability. Mm. That if you gain a qualification, whether it be from a university or from a college in different parts of the Union, it either has the equivalent status across everywhere or much or similar status. And a lot of work is going on at the moment to deal with all that. I just want to respond to one of the points that were made earlier on there in relation to framing this argument within economic terms. And I do accept your point there that, you know, I put forward a very, very economic argument there, I suppose, in response to Peter, who was talking about the effect of this within our economy. But I think there's a broader point to be made about this. I do really believe that our classrooms, our churches, our workplaces, our hospitals have all been enriched by having people come into our country to study in it, to work in it, to live in it. If I go to a GAA club at the weekend and I see all the different nationalities that are all out playing on the pitches that have come to our country, or their mums and dads have come to our country in the last few years, that for me is the kind of Ireland that as it grows up and it develops in the years to come will be even better than the great one I believe we have at the moment. I believe it is a real measure of our success as a country. And I entirely take the point that actually, and I've dealt with people who are in our asylum process, I've dealt with people that have recently become Irish citizens. By and nearly all of the people who travel to Ireland do so at huge expense to themselves or at huge difficulty. And this point of becoming an Irish citizen that we just touched there a moment ago, I mean, to become an Irish citizen here in Ireland is a very, very hard thing to do.
And the most expensive in the world. Irish citizenship is the most expensive, more expensive than US citizenship and British citizenship. Just bear in mind, well, it is hard to become an Irish citizen.
I didn't know that, but I did know how hard it is. You're talking in terms of cost, actual money.
What it actually
costs. Yeah, it's for an adult, it's something like 1,125, I think. Whereas the next most expensive is €850 for British citizenship. So it's quite interesting that, you know, yes, Alan Shatter has in fact speeded up the process of gaining citizenship, and I really applaud it. But bear in mind that it's difficult, not only in terms of the process, but also in terms of... So we are still considering these new Irish, new communities, these discourses as a problem that we have to solve, we have to manage. And I really, as you say, they have enriched Ireland. Yeah. Look at the food. Yeah. Look at the amazing and rich...
Let me bring Peter in and Ranid. Alan Shatter would be delighted to hear that you're applauding him this week, given his current difficulties. Peter O'Loughlin in Cork, do you agree that the people who have come to Ireland from various different countries over the last number of years have enriched this country?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, look, yes and no. I mean, some people enrich a country, some people don't. Some people get involved in the community, some people don't. Some people keep themselves. I mean,
as do look, Irish people.
Yes, of course. I mean, as do everybody. We're all human. You know, I mean, there's no point in trying to pick out one section of the society and say these people are responsible for enriching. Some people will be fantastic. Some people maybe not so much. But that all depends on personal experience, who you meet, what kind of community things are going on. But yeah, of course, there has been. I've got no doubt about that. But I mean, to just deal with a couple of the points about the citizenship, for example, how difficult it is to gain citizenship. Now, very recently, there was thousands of Nigerian migrants. I'm talking about Nigerians, not picking them out for any reason. It just so happens to be. Thousands of Nigerians were granted citizenship, had their applications for passports returned because their paperwork wasn't up to date. And you're talking about this very difficult citizenship process, you know, where everything's all the, I suppose the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. Yet they gain citizenship, but they couldn't get passports because documentation was in order. That's kind of worrying, to be quite honest.
What's the point you're making?
Well, the point has been made that citizenship is quite difficult to gain, that there's a certain process. But, I mean, it just strikes me as odd, to be quite honest, that you can gain citizenship, but you don't have the necessary documentation to gain a passport.
That's wrong. I mean, I've dealt with so many people in relation to this issue. who are looking to become citizens and are dealing with the whole process in relation to it. I mean, you require a gigantic amount of evidence regarding how long you've been in the country, how much time you've been a taxpayer, your interaction with the social welfare system, who your family is, how they've got in and out of the country. And you have to produce that evidence over a period of years. Mm-hmm. And if you meet anybody, I've been at some of these citizenship ceremonies and I've talked to many of the people who are at us. I mean, the waiting time of people who I've met at these citizens ceremonies who've become citizens is measured in years. Mm-hmm. So you have to provide a gigantic amount of evidence to be able to gain citizenship in the first place. And look, in terms of the difficulty that some of this has caused for people in Ireland, I fully understand that and I recognise that and I deal with that in terms of what's happening within our economy as a public representative. But I would still just come back to the core point in all of this. And I'm afraid this is an economic argument, so I'm sorry, I might disappoint you in terms of the conversation we had earlier on. If you look at how much Ireland gains in terms of what we gain from being open with the rest of the world, how would we possibly gain if we were to change that ourselves and expect other people not to respond back
look,
to us?
I wanted to respond to this earlier when the point was made about economic. Look, I mean, life isn't all about money. But sadly, if you don't have a job, you're in massive, massive trouble. You cannot live. You end up just existing. And there are hundreds of thousands of Irish people who are just existing. If they're fortunate to exist, like never mind the various whatever trouble they may in terms of mortgages or trying to look after children. I mean, that's the core priority.
And how do you think bringing in a quota is going to fix that? I mean, you acknowledged yourself earlier on. You just made the point earlier on that over the last number of years, the number of people looking to come into Ireland has come down significantly as the economic circumstances have changed massively within our country. Mm-hmm. So surely the answer to getting the hundreds of thousands of people back to work is the work that we're trying to do at the moment in terms of investment and in terms of training people. That's the most effective way to get people back to work. Fewer people want to come into Ireland in the first place because they know the work isn't there.
Many migrants too are finding it very hard to exist. Like Irish people, the situation here is very, very tough for loads of people, including those people who came here to work when we needed them. When the Irish economy absolutely needed them, they stayed because they had families, they bought homes, they got involved in mortgages, and they are in the same trouble as Irish people are.
Yeah, but that should preclude us from putting in place a common immigration policy which does make sense and which ensures that there is no undue competition. Now, if there isn't going to be undue competition, that's fine. But at least have it in place to ensure that doesn't happen. I mean, the priority is to get back to work. But I'm sorry, when you look at these training courses, people are going on to training courses. They're coming off. They're going back on. You know, I mean, like 85,000 people roughly. And I mean, look, it's very good. These training courses are fantastic for getting the unemployment figures down. I have no doubt about that. But I mean, in terms of creating jobs, you need to look at different areas of the economy. And I mean, I don't want to get off the topic too much, but if you want to create jobs, you need to start looking at our primary industries. For example, even things like agriculture, fisheries, stuff like that.
The point is that many migrants have created jobs, they have created businesses, because migrants, by and large, are enterprising people.
Yes, but they're no different to other people. Irish people are enterprising as well. And Irish people have been very enterprising over the course of this recession. And it's the Irish people themselves, because if we look at the stats...
Listen to yourself, Peter. You are actually juxtaposing here Irish people and migrant people. In other words, you know, every country can do this. People are finding it hard in every economy that's in trouble.
I know, and the government's job
and
is
Irish
to
people
make it
want
as
the
easy
freedom
possible.
To be able to go to Australia,
and they do.
To
if
Germany.
The Australian,
to, yes,
okay,
if
just
the
one voice.
Wants them in. They do. Of course they do. But that's the choice of Australia. They put in place their system. We put in place our system as an independent nation state. Well, okay, semi-independent at the moment.
But we do have our own system. I mean, our system has two different aspects to it. If you're not a member of the European Union and you're looking to come into our country, there are requirements in terms of work visas, in terms of what industries you're going to work in and the levels of education that you have. They are in place. Mm-hmm. That's what happens.
But what about other
countries? And then if you look at the other countries,
I'll
deal with the other countries then. If you look at within the European Union then, you're correct. People have the ability to move in and out of our country, just as we have the ability to move in and out of their country.
Yes, and look,
so just the detail
of
this is, we have a very extensive work visa system already in place for non-EU countries.
Look,
and
yeah,
then for EU countries,
can I just respond to that?
Peter, respond to that.
Look, yeah, we know freedom of movement, and people do like to be able to move easily without different passports, different documentation. That's great. But again, there has to be some form of control, because it works the other way as well. We all know about criminal gangs flying into Dublin for the weekend, going on a crime spree and then going back again. You know, that's the other side of the coin, which isn't dealt with. And that's something you need to control and stop. And we've made no effort to deal with that. When you bring up points like this about the free movement, people always focus on the positive. And yes, there are positives, but we can't forget the negatives. And this is the whole point. Having a controlled migration policy, the point is to keep the positives and get rid of the negatives. And there are negatives. There is competition. It does drive down wages if there's more competitiveness in the labour market. It does give free rein for criminals to come into our country, and they've been very active in this country. And that's what you have to deal with. That's what a government should deal with to protect its
citizens. Let me just say one thing, Audrey, migrants are finding it very hard to get jobs. The ESRI has done research that showed that when blank job applications are sent with African names, German names, or Irish names are being preferred for interviews and so on and so forth. You know, and we cannot select people. Of course, they're criminal gangs, and of course, we object to criminal gangs. But we can't start. Yeah, you know, the last time selections have been made were in the Nazi camps, Peter. I'm sorry. The last time people were selected according to the type of person they are. And I would hate Ireland
I mean, Mao Zedong and the Cultural Revolution, there was camps, there was selection there. You know, if you're a capitalist, for example, that was a terrible thing to be.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, make a point against it. I don't really know why you brought that up. But look, that's why I'm saying...
Because you spoke about selection, Peter. Selecting those people that we need to get in. Criminal gangs,
that's just common sense. Of course, like that's our right as an independent country.
I would like to deselect Irish criminal gangs as well.
I don't like Irish criminal gangs either.
We're off the topic.
I think we have to win this argument in the middle here. Like, I'm sorry, I don't believe parallels with Nazism or fascism are as helpful to this as some of the points that Peter made. I disagree with both in terms of parallels. The way I put this argument, why I believe it, is one basically in the middle. If you look at the detail of all this, just want to reassure people again, for non-European Union countries, we have a very sophisticated work permit system in place. I understand and I appreciate the negatives that are involved in the amount of change that's happened within our country. But I also believe that that change has yielded very many net positives to us. In terms of the specific points that Peter made there, in terms of it not dealing with the international crime, go to any Irish embassy in any major country, we have a guard presence within that embassy dealing with this very point.
Okay. I know, but that doesn't still stop people stealing phones or wallets off people on the street.
Okay.
I mean, that's
Jean-Pierre,
not a very good response.
But when I listen to Peter, and especially on the topic, on this issue of criminals, when I listen to him, is as if criminalities, crimes and offences have started with foreigners coming to Ireland. But this is how it sounds. Because I can ask you, when was the first court and tribunals put in place in Ireland? When did Ireland build the first prison? And when they did that, was it because of foreigners coming to Ireland?
See,
they build it for Irish people.
I understand that
in any country, you can be national or non-national.
Yeah,
when you do something wrong, you will face justice.
Yes, of
course. As simple
but
as that. You don't need to label foreigners, criminals.
And,
it doesn't make any sense.
No, look, it does.
Can I also ask you a question, Peter? Can I ask you
a question? Peter, just let Jean-Pierre ask you a question.
Let me ask you a question, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
What is your real blame against foreigners, against migrants? Give me why do you blame them?
Whole immigration aspect is only part of a far wider policy range. Now, as I said, we're talking about immigration here. And you obviously, like when I stood up at a press conference. I talked about the economy, I talked about government reform, I talked about Europe, talked about immigration, but immigration was what people latch onto. I said before, it is primarily economic. I want Irish people to have jobs. It's vital. Our economy cannot function without it. I do think that having a very intelligent system to handle immigration into the country makes sense, just to ensure that Irish people are looked after. Because sometimes you wonder, does our government even care? I mean, to call this country a success sometimes, as Pascal did earlier, there must be people out there in the country listening right now who are literally throwing their shoes at the radio to call what's happening at this moment a success. But to deal with your point of criminal gangs, yes, of course, every country has native-born criminals. But every country has to deal with them. There's not much you could do. You can have your guard of presence, your jail system, your court system. But to import, but not put in measures to stop other gangs from other countries, no matter what country they come from coming into your country, just flying in and flying out without being able to stop them, that's just stupid. I mean, honestly, surely they know, they're known to the police. There should be checks. There should be something like this. Just anything. You know, legislate for it. Stop it.
Okay.
Just, it's not that hard.
The more you speak about criminal gangs as being migrants, the more people out there will get the feeling that the only criminals are migrants.
But we all know. All Irish
Hold on. You really had quite a lot. Let me just say a couple of other things. The term Irish, you know, quite a lot of people got Irish citizenship in the last few years. What is Irish? Irish people are also people who originally were not from Ireland. I've had an Irish passport for the last 45 years. I didn't originate here. I'm Irish, but I'm not the sort of Irish perhaps that you would have preferred, because I might have diluted the purity of Irish culture.
This is one
of the things you spoke about, Peter. We have to think of people who reside in this jurisdiction. They're not all necessarily originally Irish, but they all work together to try and make this jurisdiction or this country prosperous and successful.
I have no problem with immigration. I have no problem at all. I just like controlled immigration, making sure
I'm afraid, Jean-Pierre, out of time. It's 11 o'clock. We have to wrap things up. But look, thank you all very much indeed. No doubt we'll return to this debate in the weeks ahead. Peter O'Loughlin, Pascal Donoghue, Dr. Ronit Lenton and Dr. Jean-Pierre Ayanga. Until Tuesday at 10, from everyone on the team, have a lovely weekend.